es el actual gobierno casi no tiene todavía reconocimiento oficial de la mayoría de las naciones del continente y del mundo.
Producto de esto, Colmán así lo ve al país.
Tenemos ahí un país muy blanco-negro, ¿verdad?, que se sigue reflejando en la vida cotidiana. ¿Hasta cuándo vamos a ir con eso y qué podemos construir a partir de eso? Es la pregunta que nos hacemos.
Andrés Colmán dice que existe el riesgo de regresar a prácticas dictatoriales vividas años atrás.
Se están dando hechos preocupantes que tienen que ver con el tema del ejercicio de la libertad de expresión y la libertad de prensa. Uno es el episodio que sufrió el colega Ray Armele cuando estaba tomando imágenes del edificio del Poder Judicial y fue demorado por un policía durante 45 minutos aproximadamente porque decía que eso estaba prohibido y que tenía que identificarse. Que yo sepa, no hay ninguna ley, ninguna reglamentación que prohíba filmar edificios públicos desde un lugar público, desde la calle. Entonces creo que eso es preocupante, que un policía pueda interpretar la ley o una ley que además no existe a su entender. Lo mismo lo que pasó anoche con jóvenes opositores que estaban realizando pegatinas y fueron también detenidos por hacerlo, ¿verdad? O sea, el argumento que plantean los policías de que eso es una falta de respeto al presidente, o porque se trata del presidente, quiere decir que si se trata de otra persona se puede hacer.
Por su parte, el viceministro de Seguridad Interna, Javier Ibarra, se comprometió a abrir un sumario a los comisarios de las comisarías tercera, octava y 21 por estas actitudes tomadas por la policía. Pero los denunciantes solicitaron conocer de dónde proviene la orden superior para tomar las acciones ejecutadas. Desde el sur del Paraguay, José Pepe Ríos.
En otras noticias, cientos de obreros y obreras latinas salieron a las calles de Manhattan en Nueva York para exigir mejor remuneración por su trabajo y trato justo. Entre los y las manifestantes estaban trabajadores de supermercados, hoteles y aeropuertos, empleadas domésticas, conductores de taxis y limpiadores de automóviles, entre otros. La protesta formó parte de un día de acción nacional que incluyó migrantes de México, Ecuador, República Dominicana y otras regiones del continente. Similares protestas se realizaron en las ciudades de Miami, Washington, Chicago, Filadelfia y Los Ángeles. Según el Sindicato Internacional de Empleados de Servicios, casi 4 millones de trabajadores en Estados Unidos ganan menos de $7.25 por hora. Y en Nueva York, 4 de cada 10 hogares se ven forzados a subsistir con bajos salarios. Diversas organizaciones de varias regiones del Perú participan en la gran marcha ecológica que se realiza en todo el país y que próximamente pasará por la capital, Lima. Por allí también pasará la enorme bandera ecológica que recorre el Perú con un mensaje de apoyo a las comunidades cajamarquinas en su lucha contra el proyecto minero Conga. Alexis Chen amplía la información.
Hoy, en horas de la mañana, comenzó con la gran concentración para la unión de las banderas regionales, lo que se ha denominado la gran marcha de la bandera ecológica en Lima. La Mamapachapa Unanchan, la bandera ecológica más grande del mundo, recorre nuestro país para mostrar la grandeza de la lucha del pueblo hermano de Cajamarca, una lucha por la defensa del agua y de la vida. Así se le ha denominado. ¿Quiénes son los responsables del traslado de llevar la gran bandera ecológica? Han recorrido ya el país. Ellos llevan un mensaje de paz por la vida, motivando en sus recorridos a que se construyan banderas ecológicas por donde pasa esta gran bandera. Esto previo días nada más a lo que será el aniversario patrio y se espera el discurso del presidente de la República con mucha expectativa. Además, por los últimos cambios que se han generado en el gabinete, ¿cierto?, con el cambio del ministro Valdés, a quien desde ya de mucho tiempo diferentes sectores políticos, sociales, dirigenciales venían pidiendo el relevo del ex premier Valdés. Hay mucha expectativa, espera que este nuevo gabinete tenga la capacidad para resolver los conflictos sociales que existen en el país y sobre todo resolver el tema de Conga frente a lo último que ha anunciado en este caso John Aratea, que es uno de los que están propiciando el diálogo, que el proyecto no debería continuar transitoriamente mientras se genera todo el proceso de conversación con ambas partes, tanto con la empresa minera como con los dirigentes cajamarquinos. Desde Villa El Salvador, informó Alexis Chen.
En Bolivia, el sindicato del Servicio Departamental de Caminos cumple un paro de 48 horas y amenaza con radicalizar sus protestas hasta la paralización si el gobierno no cumple con la petición de descentralizar el funcionamiento de la institución. Erlinda González reporta.
Hombres y mujeres afiliados al sindicato del Servicio Departamental de Caminos continúan con las movilizaciones anunciadas en los anteriores días en rechazo a la desconcentración de la institución hacia las provincias del departamento, y a partir de esta jornada están cumpliendo el paro de 48 horas y amenazan con radicalizar las medidas si la gobernación no retrocede en la descentralización de la institución, según el ejecutivo del sindicato, Hernando Choque.
Si ellos quieren hacer mantenimiento, tienen que prácticamente consensuar con el sindicato y con los trabajadores para que de esa manera nosotros estemos ya firmando o por lo menos redactando el borrador de esta solución para que pueda firmar el gobernador. Ahora estamos acatando el paro de 48 horas entre hoy y mañana, y si no se da solución estaríamos haciéndolo las 72 horas como corresponde, como ha salido el voto resolutivo la anterior semana. Eso sería lo que puedo informarle a toda la población, a todos los que están escuchando, incluyendo al autotransporte, porque estamos tomando medidas ya de hecho para que, bueno, nos pueda escuchar unas horas la gobernación y tratar de solucionar el problema aquí de camino.
Mientras el director de la institución, Luis Fernando Navarro, asegura que no existe razón para que estén movilizados y afirma que no existe desconcentración de la institución, sino al contrario, es una delegación de funciones a los ejecutivos seccionales de las provincias con la finalidad de atender las demandas en las vías carreteras.
No tendría sentido. Por eso le digo, a mí me sorprende, yo estoy en este momento en la ciudad de La Paz viendo precisamente cosas muy importantes para el CEDEC. Me he permitido viajar porque, bueno, se quedó que hasta el día viernes, digamos que hasta el día viernes se va a elaborar el documento final, nos teníamos que sentar, etcétera, pero no quería decir que ayer martes era una condición sine qua non y si no estaba, no avanzábamos. Teníamos hasta el día viernes para presentar ese documento y, bueno, la presión, por supuesto que la estima, pues a Tarija, teníamos que seguir avanzando en las obras que estamos encarando en el CEDECA.
En México, los reguladores bancarios de ese país aplicaron una multa de 28 millones de dólares a la subsidiaria del banco HSBC en la República Mexicana por no haber prevenido el lavado de dinero en cuentas de la institución bancaria. La multa equivale a cerca de la mitad de las ganancias anuales del banco inglés en México. La sanción contra HSBC ocurre poco después de que un comité del Senado norteamericano declarara que entre 2007 y 2008 HSBC envió a Estados Unidos desde México como 7 mil millones de dólares en efectivo. El reporte del Senado señaló que ese volumen de dinero en efectivo solo podría hacerse con dinero del narcotráfico. Estados Unidos se escuda en presunta defensa de los derechos humanos para promover su campaña mediática y de presión hacia gobiernos de Latinoamérica, como en su tiempo sucedió en Irak y Libia, y que se plasmó en una injerencia externa, aseguran los expertos. Noticias RT tiene los detalles.
Y mientras que los medios occidentales omiten mucha información sobre el conflicto sirio, estos sí que denotan una mayor intervención a los líderes de los países de América Latina. Los artículos sobre su supuesto autoritarismo sirven, según varios analistas, para dibujar un guión similar al de Irak y Libia. En esos casos, también los mandatarios se enfrentaron a la crítica mediática que después se plasmó en una injerencia externa. Así, el periódico The Washington Post ha publicado un amplio informe al respecto. El artículo está dedicado a los presidentes latinoamericanos que, según el tabloide, han sido elegidos de forma democrática, pero que están gobernando de manera contraria a esos valores. El título del líder más poderoso en ese aspecto ha recaído en Hugo Chávez. El rotativo también cita al mandatario ecuatoriano, Rafael Correa, al líder de Bolivia, Evo Morales, y al presidente de Nicaragua, Daniel Ortega. El analista político Jorge Capelán piensa que Washington se escuda en la defensa de los derechos humanos para promover su campaña mediática y de presión hacia las autoridades de América Latina.
Últimamente han arreciado las críticas de Washington a los gobiernos progresistas de la región utilizando los derechos humanos como excusa. Los Estados Unidos dejarán en paz a América Latina solo cuando circunstancias mayores, como una profundización de la crisis estructural y capitalista que padecen, les obligue a abandonar sus pretensiones hegemónicas a nivel global. América Latina, hay que entenderlo, es el reservorio estratégico de materias primas y de fuerza de trabajo de Estados Unidos, además de que por su posición le permite a los propios Estados Unidos controlar el Atlántico y el Pacífico. Por eso, los Estados Unidos de América no tienen que desestabilizar todo proyecto independentista que haya en la región.
En California se realizan manifestaciones de protesta contra la brutalidad policiaca en el condado de Orange, mientras que en la frontera sur con México se habla del uso de la tortura contra migrantes por parte de la patrulla fronteriza. Isabel García es integrante de la Coalición de Derechos Humanos de Arizona.
El lunes pasado se pasó el segundo de una serie de videos de Public Broadcasting System Need to Know. Tenemos que saber, ¿no?, de estar informados. Y en este video, bueno, se mostró el abuso por parte de la patrulla fronteriza, el asalto sexual de una mujer, las golpizas de otras personas, es decir, torturaron realmente a Anastasio Hernández Rojas, que se mostró en el video anterior. Es decir, es una agencia completamente fuera de control. Siempre ha sido fuera de control, pero ahora con la cantidad de agentes que existen, es obvio que el resultado iba a ser que iba a haber mucho, mucho más casos de abuso por parte de la agencia de la patrulla fronteriza. Instancias de abuso de esas personas, de negarles el agua, negarles cuidado médico, golpearles, luego negarles el cuidado médico, romper sus propiedades, con el aumento enorme que se ha visto esta agencia en los últimos 14 años, digamos, obviamente iban a aumentar el caso de abuso porque no cambia ni la cultura de la inmigración. Son agentes que realmente no saben la historia de inmigración, no conocen a los mexicanos, es decir, son sujetos a la misma mentira de todo mundo en contra del migrante. Entonces, imagínense ese tipo de persona tener esas posiciones de tanto control y poder, y que hacen un buen salario. Entonces hay este aumento de personal ha resultado en un aumento histórico del abuso de la gente, sean emigrantes con papeles, sin papeles, aún los ciudadanos. Como ya sabe, aquí a Carlos Lamadrid lo mató por espaldas en Douglas, Arizona, el año pasado, un agente de la patrulla fronteriza. A la fecha no han dicho nada, es decir, siguen violando a las mujeres, sigue el abuso de todo tipo. Y nada pasa.
Era Isabel García, integrante de la Coalición de Derechos Humanos de Arizona. Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. En nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Yes, 2 hours of me and you and who knows, a bunch of other tapes and interviews, maybe some phone-ins, maybe even a drop-in. You never can tell. This is Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz. We're looking. We're hooking. We hope we can find some, and we notice them, unfortunately, diminishing. It's called... The name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. My name is Robert Norse, and I invite you to stay with me for the next 2 hours and join me at 427-3772. That's the call-in number, 427-3772. You are tuned to 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, here in Santa Cruz.
Peace.
Well, that was a nice beginning, and it was a nice lullaby. I guess I'm supposed to be waking people up, not putting people to sleep, but hopefully that will give you a moment of peace. That's from a group called Siente, Night Songs from Around the World, by Hilary Field and Patrice O'Neill. Castle of Dromore, it's an Irish song. So nice for putting the babies to bed. Well, yeah. I picked that CD up at the Uncle Banzai concert, which, as you regular listeners know from my last show, Uncle Banzai is a group I really love. They've got some great oldies. Their newies are not kind of my favorite, but they used to kind of get into... Well, I thought they got into issues more. But then again, everybody maybe got into issues more. Or maybe I'm just too negative or too pessimistic. I don't know. Anyway, I try to get into issues. That's what I'm up to. And I will be trying to do that more and more on this show and encouraging you to get into issues, specifically issues of how poor people are treated in Santa Cruz, how the public is treated by government, and how veterans are treated. In fact, that may be a call from a veteran and a veteran caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
I'm Robert. This is David Silva.
David Minton Silva, 1996 City Council candidate who
is that my claim to fame? Oh, my God.
Well, you're that, and you were also a famous you were a famous sleep man faster and initiative seeker.
Yes, actually, kind of infamous. I fasted 5 months and 9 days, and the mayor and the city council member, who we all love dearly, came to me and told me they were going to put it on the ballot, so I ended my fast. But they lied. It's hard to believe politicians would lie to someone fasting 5 months and 9 days just because they're afraid they were going to die.
Oh, well, you know, those politicians, they have a campaign to run and a more conservative constituency to deal with.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. You know, there's nothing conservative or progressive or liberal about starving people to death and leaving people out in the cold and making it impossible for people to live. There's so much bureaucracy that has to be cleaned up. And I went to a meeting this morning that, Robert, would be an inspiration to me for a long time. I haven't been to such a meeting like in at least 40 years. It was veterans coming together on housing.
Huh.
And we've had it. We've had it with the Housing Authority. We've had it with all. And VASH is on our side. We got the Veterans Administration on our side. But they need us all to rally and to make sure that, you know, the Housing Authority straightens up and flies right. I encourage any veteran out there, veteran any whichever decade, you know, you're eligible for housing. You should be paying no more than 0.3, you know, 0.3, 30% of your income ever for housing from now on. So, you know, and you have that right. And all you have to do is just get a hold of your Veterans Administration officer right here in Santa Cruz, and they'll plug you in with the appropriate meeting. There's meetings every week, and there's meetings every month, depending on what level of it, you know. I'm sort of like a final stages guy. They've got me finally housed, but, you know, they screwed it over so bad, I'm having to do a lot of fights here. You know, they screwed over the amount of money. And it's all Housing Authority, not veterans. So we're going to have a lot of fighting going on. We encourage veterans to show up and start the fight. We call ourselves the Revolutionary Council of the New Faces of the Veterans of Santa Cruz.
Say that again?
Revolutionary Council of the New Faces of the Veterans of Santa Cruz.
Of the New Faces of the Veterans. That's a mouthful there.
That's a mouthful. And we have this this sort of really, really old time, you know, sort of Panther gal that's leading us, and a lot of us hippies. And so we sort of let her push around. I have a feeling we'll improve the name. This is the first meeting today. You know,
well, how many people showed up at the vets meeting?
135.
And how many vets would you estimate there are in the county?
At least 1,300, if not 13,000.
So you don't know exactly?
No, I don't know.
And you will find out, won't you?
I will find out, and I will let you know. I'm not going with the low numbers they're giving us, no.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the reason I ask is I've been a cranky voice from the side when they closed the vets hall without cause about 2 years ago.
It's now, starting next Wednesday, Building E is the veterans' new hall.
What is? First of all, let me wait, David.
Go ahead.
Let me first. Yeah, let me say what I was going to say, which is that The Veterans Hall, of course, is not just the Veterans Hall for veterans. It's also a hall that the veterans was generous in allowing the rest of the community to use, not to mention the yoga meisters who took over it and the commercial interests that kind of crept in.
But also, I threw a couple events that I wouldn't have had been able to have anywhere else but there that were pretty nice.
Yeah,
events,
I mean, it was quite a nice place to go. I mean,
nice
there was
place,
a little there was a little bit of discrimination. You can't use our bathroom, said, you know, Tim, what's his name? It was, you know, kind of stopping people from coming in and so forth a couple years ago. But
I don't remember that. You know, I've been gone.
He wasn't a veteran. He was the guy that the veterans, if he was a veteran, he was one who was opposed by a lot of other veterans. But, you know, David, I got to, let me finish this off here. What I'm saying is that the Veterans did not respond to the closing of the Veterans Hall other than by, I don't know, whimpering and wailing. And I guess they hired an engineer to assess that the so-called earthquake damage wasn't really serious enough to close the hall, just maybe a part of the hall.
Yeah.
But they never did what, you know, I know veterans 20 years ago did, was they simply did a sit-in. They took over the Veterans Hall.
And that's what we're going to be doing from now on.
Yeah.
This is a whole new Veterans Administration.
Yeah.
You know, Michelle Obama is in charge now, and we're not taking shit from anybody anymore.
Michelle Obama? Are you kidding?
Yeah, we're not taking shit from anybody
anymore. Don't depress me. You have me going there. Michelle Obama?
I'm just teasing you, Uncle Robert.
Okay. So you're suggesting that you know, what are the demands?
No, there were like 134 veterans all pissed off. I mean, 135,
pissed off.
Only one of them was for the system.
Pissed off. Hang on, David. Pissed off about what?
Each one of us got fucked over by the housing authority one way or another.
Okay, now give me an example of how a typical veteran faces problems. What kind of problems does the housing authority pose for a typical vet?
They want you to be a single bachelor, or else they can't adapt to the new rules that the Veterans Administration has imposed upon them. That's the one thing that makes a big difference in your funding situation. And where the Veterans Administration has a undefined, you know, families are what you say they are. If you say that's your family, that's your family. That's the Veterans Administration. Housing Authority has a complete paranoid, anti-gay, anti-AIDS, anti-disabled, anti-elderly veteran living with a family kind of bias. And so there's lots of problems, Robert. We're just starting to unveil them, but we're on the attack. And I'm telling you, Housing Authority better straighten up and fly right.
So one of the, I'm trying to take this step by step, David.
Yeah.
One of the problems that the Veterans Administration has, not the Veterans Administration, but the Housing Authority has given to veterans.
Quite different.
It the VA allows veterans to define a family as a group of people, I don't know, living together, relying on each other, loving each other, whatever.
Yes.
Whereas the Housing Authority demands, what, a nuclear family or something?
Yeah. And they won't come out and say to their face, but they do it administratively, and the veterans is on to them, and we've had enough.
So what exactly do the veterans need from the housing authority that keeps them going to it? I guess they need housing.
They need them to obey the new laws regarding VASH.
Right,
first
but, no, you misunderstand me. What is it? What resources are they seeking from the housing authority?
All we're seeking from the housing authority is administration of the program.
Which
and
is,
they're not able
which
to
is,
do it
what,
because
what
they
is
do
the,
it under their own rules.
What again, you're missing my point. What is the program that they're seeking? What kind of specific resource? I assume it's housing, but...
Housing.
Yeah, I mean, so what is a veteran...
And everything that supports housing and your ability to stay in the house.
What is a veteran owed from the housing authority, let's say, that they're not getting or that they should be getting, but they're having trouble getting right now?
They're not... Expedited, priority, immediate service. When we say we're going to move next year, we mean we're going to move next year, not 5 years from now. When we say we have that our landlord has sold the property off from under us, we have to have a new contract. We need it now, not 3 months from now. Period.
So
they have to
start
doing their job, and if they don't like it, they can get a new one.
So we're talking about the fact that the housing authority is doing unnecessary delays.
They're doing unnecessary delays, and they're doing them purposely and with a style that we are now beginning to all recognize. And every one of us, when we came, brought our individual problems to the meeting, we thought it was our own individual problems. Then we saw, aha, we've seen this style before.
And what is that style and why?
That style is the same kind of repressive style that all of us were fighting in the streets for in the 60s that Johnson did and that Nixon just took over. That style, we're sick of it, we're not going to have it. And if the Obama administration says they're going to think it'll allow the W. Bush people administrators to carry this out, they're sadly mistaken.
Okay, let me ask, again, what style are you referring to? What exactly are the...
Can I call in again later? I got to pee so bad, Robert. I'm so sorry.
Oh, yeah, call back if you'd like, David.
Okay, bye.
No problem. I think that was David Silva, who's a fast talker, sometimes a little too fast for me. And but, you know, he did call me earlier with an enthusiastic message that there was apparently a very, very positive and well-attended meeting, as you heard, of the this new group, the Revolutionary Council of the New Faces of the Veterans of Santa Cruz. That's going to be a hard one to put on a single sign, for sure. But, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm always glad when people get together and find that what they think of their own private problems are actually the result of a repeated form of abuse from a single institution and organization that actually their money is and their service is going to support. I, as most regular listeners know, I also refer to veterans as, you know, sort of, what would you call it, recovering killers or murderers abroad or tools of the administration and of an imperial government, which they are or have been, because there's no need for an army of the kind of huge force in a military like we have. It is an abusive organization that essentially terrorizes the world. But that said, of course, people who have been through that machine, you know, and persuaded that they were somehow serving their country or serving their community, when in fact no one was threatening them, that they were the ones that were doing the threatening, they have developed, of course, they develop all kinds of severe problems as a consequence, as they should. Ordinary human beings who become killers, I would hope, would develop severe problems. Otherwise, we're in really big trouble. And those kinds of problems, you know, are not psychological problems, but the same kind of problems that poor people who are out of work and don't have housing or are on the edge of losing their housing or have to cram in with their families until everybody loses their housing or their families break up, the same problems everyone has. But that, you know, I think it's a third of the homeless community are veterans, and as it's been said at some point, I don't know the accuracy of that stat nationally, but that one comes back to my mind. And so it's, you know, it's definitely a concern of mine in Santa Cruz, and particularly when groups kind of get together to try to help vets and homeless vets, and the city authorities crack down either by closing their facilities. Actually, that was the county, I believe, that closed the vets hall, but county or city agencies doing that kind of abuse. It gets me fired up, and I encourage others to get fired up about it, too. There was, you know, years and years of criticism of Tim Bratton, who was sort of a managerial person in the Veterans Hall. It wasn't really elected by the vets or appointed by the vets, as I understand it, or he was a problematic person, according to many vets. And when eventually some blamed him for the closing of the vets hall, the complaints that closed the vets hall, which had to do with some, you know, falling cornice in a section of the vets hall building, which gave the county the excuse to declare this an earthquake-damaged building, which two engineering studies by veterans hired engineers disputed to no avail. That's all kind of water under the bridge, but the history is interesting because it may tell the tale that leads us up to the present. So, David may be calling back, but until he does, let's turn to a few other items. For instance, some street interviews, which I've picked up on, and then I'll be discussing bits and pieces of news I want to pass on, including an audible version of the Bob Lee interaction with a bunch of us activists, which is now posted online. It probably isn't even necessary for me to play it, but for those of you who haven't gone to the I guess you can get it by going to the Occupy Santa Cruz website. That's probably the best place to go. Occupy Santa Cruz, not the Facebook website, but the other Occupy Santa Cruz website, which I will try to give you more details on. And you can hear an interesting dialogue that we had with Bob Lee, which I will do as we get deeper into the program. Again, if you have reports, and I'm particularly interested in any concerns about police misconduct or problems in terms of homeless folks getting their property taken, their campsites despoiled, tickets of an abusive sort that have nothing to do with real crimes, that are in fact punishing them for engaging in survival behavior that they have to do, like sleeping or camping, sitting down, peacefully panhandling without being abusive, but, you know, violating Officer Winston's sense of what's appropriate in a particular place and time. And he has got a nice thick rule book you can use to back him up. I want to hear that, and I want you to call me at 427-3772. 427-FRSC. We should also be hearing, I think, from Al Williams of Fresno, who's doing a kind of a national homeless event tomorrow in Fresno. It's a statewide homeless memorial event. And how would I describe that? Let's see. 12 noon to 8 p.m. in Fresno's Reading Park is going to be in honor of those who continued their journey, also, you know, the people who died. It's kind of a midsummer homeless memorial, looks like to me. And it's 22nd of December is National Memorial Day for the homeless people, coldest, darkest, shortest day of the year, Al Williams writes. And the problem for many people... problem for many people with the dollars, those with the authority to make a difference, the mayor, city council, county board of supervisors. I'm having a little problem reading this. They simply don't care. Now, the purpose of the December 22nd day was to make people aware of conditions that homeless people live in, and the Fresno activists think that people already know that, from freezing cold in the winter to stroke heat in the summer. Last week in Fresno, three homeless people died next to Poverello House, we believe, from excess heat. The problem is to people with dollars, they don't care. And so my friends and fellow homeless advocates, Al writes, and those who have lost a homeless family member, a husband, a wife, a son, a daughter, maybe a homeless friend, or just someone who really gives a damn, come and join us here in Fresno. And he's invited people from all over the state. And if it's possible for those who have left us to see, they will be proud of us, know that we really do give a damn. There will be really having a problem with this email. My apologies. There will be excellent entertainment with Native American drummers and dancers for the opening ceremonies, Blake Jones Band, the Trikes, Eddie Montoya and friends, Matthew Embry, who is a regular caller here on Free Radio and is probably a regular listener. He's a former DJ, plus guest speakers all over the state, Food Not Bombs and Food, kick-ass celebration you'll never forget. And that's happening tomorrow in Fresno. I will not be going to that Fresno celebration. Too damn hot and too far away. But again, Al will be calling in to talk about the Fresno situation, and I will also be trying to do a little Fresno update, because in Fresno, Mike Rhodes does a very kind of methodical job of trying to document how the police are, well, quite frankly, fucking over Fresno homeless people, as in spite of the large amounts of money that the Fresno government gets to supposedly address homeless issues. And we've had Mike on the air numerous times. I don't think he's going to be on tonight, and I don't know if he's written anything recently on the Fresno or the Central Valley Indy Bay, which is the place to go to get that. But the last thing he wrote, there was the Fresno legal victory, where Occupy Fresno held a press conference where there was a settlement of its lawsuit against Fresno County. Not entirely everything they wanted, upholding constitutional rights of freedom of assembly and speech, removing the restrictive ordinances, limiting the circulation of flyers, carrying of signs, and holding of small gatherings in Courthouse Park. Those who had previously been arrested for that are not going to face criminal charges. Fresno County spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to monitor and arrest Occupy Fresno demonstrators. And I think that was probably also the case here in Santa Cruz. And I don't think that's too inflated a figure. That's the figure, the Santa Cruz 11, those charged with peaceful occupation of the building, the bank building, back in last winter. That's the figure that some say describes the amount of money the district attorney's office has spent and is spending. It's denied by the district attorney, who says, "Oh no, that's not happening. No way, Jose." So we may hear from Al Williams later about the day that's happening tomorrow, the demonstration day, the memorial day for people who are dying, because preventable deaths that have to do with people being exposed to elements, particularly in Fresno, which is extremely excessive heat and also freezing temperatures. Santa Cruz, less so, but they still have, we still have those problems. And we have, as most of you listening probably know, a major crackdown on homeless people going on in the last 3 weeks that the police department is bragging about on its website, on its blog. And I'll try to read a bit about that, although I'm having, as I said, a little bit of computer problem, so I may have to postpone a lot of information about that until later. Let's hear from the street and folks out there.
It's Red Church time. It's Monday, the 23rd of July, 2012, around 5:30. We're talking with...
I don't have a
report. No report? So well. No. But do you have a report, Mary?
Yes, this is Crazy Mary. Okay, it's Monday afternoon, and we're outside the Red Church. Going to have some... I'm on the Match Housing Program, all right?
What is...
Something to end chronic homeless, but it's based through HPHP in the county, blah, blah. But I can't have visitors.
Well, of course. We don't want people consorting with you. You might get pregnant, for one thing. Well,
I
have no idea.
Are you in a rumor now?
Certainly not.
Well, you're past menopause age, too, Robert.
I'm more of a womanopause guy.
Womanopause, okay.
I pause at the women.
Yeah, okay. And you don't pause at me. No pause.
I'm not going to paw you.
But anyway, yeah, we're just wondering...
you're not allowed visitors in this program.
That's what I found out. It's a stringent requirement. I can't wait to get my fucking Section 8.
And where do you live? What kind of a...
I live in an apartment.
It's an apartment, it's a condo. How are the accommodations? There's a bathroom and such.
Well, I have my own studio.
And so...
And I'm on GA, and... I guess they're going to cut me off of GA, but I applied for SSI. Hopefully I get my fucking nut check. Thank you, fucking Uncle Sam. I'll suck your dick any day.
Well, is someone monitoring you? I mean, do you have somebody who comes in and cucks you in at night?
I'm paranoid, okay?
No, but I mean, is there a paid person who walks in at night and tucks you in and all that sort of thing?
No, it's not an SLE crap. It's through the county. They want me to do this other shit. They want to do home visits. I want to fire the motherfuckers personally. Hi, thank you, fuck off.
So, how do they know that you're not having visitors? I mean,
my neighbors complain.
So, in other words, do they tell your neighbors to spy on you, or
am I being paranoid? I don't know what the fuck is going on.
Well, but one of the conditions is you're not supposed to have visitors, is what you're saying.
Yes, right, exactly.
And how long have you lived in this place?
Now you're asking me way too many questions. I plead the fifth.
She's pleading the fifth, folks.
I won't suck Robert's dick, but he might have to take a rain check.
I've had no particular... Well, we won't get into that at this time. Our sexual interactions are not really...
Okay, when's the next tough meeting?
Wednesday, of course. Every Wednesday at 10 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe. But dick sucking is not necessarily on the agenda. You get free coffee, though.
No, dick sucking with coffee. You can't suck dick with hot coffee.
Well, consenting dick sucking between or pussy licking, it might be a possibility.
We have to add ice cream with that. Okay, thank you.
There may be some ice cream.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Mayor. Any hassles with police as far as campsite attacks that you heard about?
They still owe me fucking money. And, they've been fucking with everybody.
For example, what have you heard recently? Anything specific?
Well, they've raided a few camps, and Caltrans is always doing property, stealing shit.
Any particular...
But they give you a 3-day notice, blah, blah, blah. This is the typical Santa Cruz crepe regime, fucking the puppet fucking assholes. And you know what? We can't stop unless we go camp in their fucking front yard.
You've been talking...
You don't know who I am?
I do, but for the benefit of our audience.
This is Crazy fucking Mary. Why ain't I fucking with you? dear, but pretend.
Fair enough. Most of us have that problem. Thank you, Mary. So we're talking with cast on your left arm there.
Yes, sir. I have now a lawyer for the disabled vets, American vets. They will help me get my all my lawyer stuff done and dealt with, and I don't have to
deal
with
it. Now, you need a lawyer because what you're trying to sue one of these departments? Only one squeeze to a customer there, Mary.
You got any pot?
No.
Why not?
I'm trying to sue the Santa Cruz PD.
And which officers in particular do you find need that kind of correction?
I'm not positive the names, but my lawyer has the names already put down on paper.
The name of your lawyer?
It's, ask,
but maybe she'll be back soon.
Can't remember his name?
No.
Was going to tell, Herbster was going to, he says he has gotten a lawyer, and he says you know the name of the lawyer that he's got. Perhaps you don't. Perhaps he's wrong. Who knows? Any reports from the street?
And we're talking, the guy Perps, or Lawrence, as he's also called, has been walking around with a cast on his left arm for the last week or two. He claimed in an interview we had about a week or two ago that he was dragged out of the bushes and bones broken in his arm by either deputies or police. And that he woke up in the hospital. I don't know the reliability or credibility of this report necessarily. I ran into a photographer, professional photographer, who was interested in his story and wanted to take some pictures and do some research on it. I didn't get the latest update. I think there may be some question about the reliability of this report. And if anybody has any more information on this or on other instances that are happening, because there does seem to be a surge of abusive behavior against homeless people by the police department, and also I've gotten some indication, I don't have a lot of specifics, so that's been happening from non-police folks too, although it's not like everybody is being targeted all the time. So again, the more specifics I hear, the better I can communicate, and we better can understand the broader picture as to what's going on. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. We're also, you can go to freakradio.org and learn more about Free Radio. If you want to get the actual stream of this for, an online listening to the radio, you have to go to TuneIn, you browse for TuneIn, and then put FRSC in the TuneIn website, and you should be able to reach us. If you happen to be at home and a computer outside the Santa Cruz area, you can also hear Free Radio that way. You can also give a call to me, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, off-air, when I can, and I'll also take reports of problems and try to pass those on to the rest of you here on the radio. And you're welcome, of course, to call into the station now while I'm on the air at 427-3772. My apologies for the bad quality of this particular recording. It does improve, though, as I understand it. I think it wasn't, I'm sure if it was batteries or a crappy recorder. I am seriously considering moving into the digital area. I know digitalism has been the rage for the last 5 to 10 years, and I may be considerably behind the curve, but still, old ways die hard, as many of you may know, particularly of you who are old and dying hard.
For yourself, seen anything, heard of any police spoiling expeditions?
I think Santa Cruz isn't prepared for a natural disaster, and everybody in Santa Cruz would probably die because the city council is too lazy, worried about the homeless instead of worrying about natural disasters in this area. That's my comment.
Fair enough. So how you can say they worry about the homeless rather than worrying about the, I guess they worry about the menace of the homeless.
The deity of the homeless.
The devil tree of the homeless.
Yeah.
That's
what they call us now.
Detritus, if you don't mind. You know what that means, right?
I certainly think I do.
What do you think it means?
Well, it's trite, but it's detritus. In other words, it's icky poo stuff.
Garbage.
We have a man recently arrived from Reno. Your name's?
Kenny.
And Kenny, you say that marijuana is now legal in the good and great state of Nevada?
Medically acceptable, yes.
And you have to have a $100 card and a $100 recommendation and all that shit?
Not if you're Indian.
And you have feathers in your hair, so that makes you one of the Redskins?
I'm a Pyramid Lake native traditionalist, which pretty much puts me off the radar for any of these dudes.
So have you actually been approached by police who said, I smell marijuana? Then when they saw your Indian credentials, what did they
do? There was no credentials about it. Hey, Robert, there was none about that. They simply looked at me and they went, you're one of the kids off the res, huh? I went, yep. He goes, you're a kid off the res. I said, yes, I am. He goes, all right, I don't want to talk to you. I'm not dealing with this. And he handed me back my utensil and walked away.
Utensil being?
A weather reed off the river. They are a form of reed that grows along the Truckee River. They're hollow. They're about an inch. They're about 2 inches long. And you can crack the ends of them and smoke basically anything you want through them.
And what were you smoking in that hollow reed?
Ganja.
Which is, of course, an Indian name for the Mary Jane plant.
Mota. Mota is.
Ah, well, there you are. I mean, Mota, like, I'm talking about like Indian as in Mata. India, you know, that sort of thing. Yeah,
Mota.
Right. Fair enough. Again.
Hell no, it's too hot.
It's today, but it's been
back down here.
It's hot as well.
Thank you, guys.
A little problem with this recording, as you can see. Let's take a discreet musical break, and I will be right back. don't go away. There's more ahead.
Everything to live for and only chance to lose.
And that was from A World to Win. Songs for the Struggle for Global Justice, Sarah Marlowe. Of course, it is about 13 years old, but it's got a nice sound to it. One more. And well, actually, you know, I think I'm going to move directly into the Berkeley City Council meeting of July 10th. That was the meeting that discussed the sitting ban that the mayor was putting on the ballot. And it's I'm getting this directly off of the City of Berkeley's website, which has video playback of City Council, the Berkeley City Council. I think Santa Cruz streams it, and I think it may also now have playback, which I think is good. Although if you want to keep copies of it for any peculiar reason, you better get a copy while it's still around, or copy it off your computer while you still have it, because I think after a year or two they destroy the old stuff and no longer archive it. Why be held accountable if you can avoid it? Before I get into that, though, I think what I'm going to do is respond to a listener who called in, Bob LaMonica, or Battling Bob, as I used to call him. He's an activist who often has long conversations with Thomas Levitt in the morning on Sunday, the guy whose show precedes mine from 7:30 to 9:30. My show is from 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon. And Bob has been concerned about hypocrisy in city government and abuse of power. And he's been trying to hold the American Civil Liberties Union locally accountable, which I've always told him is a hopeless and a hapless task. But he was joined by Steve Plaich, an activist with Occupy Santa Cruz and in the DCEL movement, a guy who's been doing a needle exchange and suicide prevention and is running for Santa Cruz City Council for a second time. Another thing I do not approve of particularly. It does provide Plaich with a forum to talk about some of these issues, and I'm glad that he does, when he does, talk about them. Also tends, unfortunately, to dilute, I think, what is said about them. You can't talk about everything all the time. You've got to focus, and if you spend your energy in one direction, you're not going to be spending it in another. But Steve has been spending a lot of energy in Occupy movement, and I commend him for that. He recently went to court, and to take a side road here for a moment, on Friday, and he is fighting the city's attempt to throw out his challenge to a lawsuit. And the lawsuit concerns an issue that really seems to be musty, historical, and perhaps in some sense irrelevant to the current situation, but it's not really. It has to do with the city's attempt to declare the homeless campground next to Occupy Santa Cruz, the Occupy Santa Cruz campground that was successfully feeding and sheltering and providing community and a meaningful kind of place for hundreds of people, several hundred people, and between October and December of last year. The attempt to shut it down that then Mayor Coonerty and Vice Mayor Lane and the City Council and City Manager Martine Bernal and Police Chief Kevin Vogel did. They had lawsuits against the Occupy Santa Cruz and against Steve Plaich personally. And the Occupy Santa Cruz, who's being represented in this action by Attorney Ed Fry, who's got all kinds of problems himself in terms of the attacks on him for his advocacy of homeless civil rights, has had to kind of abandon the lawsuit. And because the campground was destroyed by the police on December 8th and people were essentially turned into refugees at that time, at a time when they had no alternate or legal shelter, simply destroyed by Chief Vogel's goon squads, is what I really have to call them, because that's what they were in this situation. The actual reality, there's no campground there. There's just a park that is closed at night. So it's very nice for the tourists and the locals during the day. And at night, it's illegal to be there. And some people probably are there anyway, sleeping and hiding and so forth. But it's... you know, it's made part of this fantasy that everything is okay. We want to make sure these homeless people aren't around. And if they are, we'll give them tickets and we'll drive them out of town. We'll put them in jail if they don't answer their tickets. In any case, Plaich's claimed that there was a constitutional First Amendment right to be there, public right of assembly. And he's still pursuing that issue. I don't know exactly what the disposition of that lawsuit was. In fact, I'm probably going to give him a quick call now to see if I can understand better exactly what went down there. It's been a little obscure to me, and maybe I can actually get him on the line. Let's see if we can reach that man. He's sometimes a difficult man to reach, particularly with his city council campaign. But when you reach him, he's often quite responsive. Steve? Hello, Steve? Let's try again. See if we can get this man on the phone. He's also does a thing called the Homeless Legal Assistance Project. And if you call him at 466-6078 with a problem like a ticket, and a lot of people apparently are, he reports more people who are homeless are getting citations, he will get back to you.
Hi, you've reached Will Hall Trucking.
On the other hand, you got to make sure you're dialing the right number, and I'm going to double check on that one right now. It's like I'm maybe a little off base here. And while I'm fumbling around with that, let's turn to the Berkeley City Council. And this is something that it's already a couple weeks old. It has to do with the fact of a sit-lie law, that is to say a law similar to Santa Cruz's sitting ban, which makes it illegal to sit on most of the sidewalks. Berkeley, the law that's being proposed, and it's actually not being proposed as a law, but as an initiative to the voters, probably a way of creating a hot-button issue to draw conservative, we don't want them homeless in our town, voters to the polls, and getting them to ignore other issues, one which Mayor Tom Bates, who I believe is running for re-election, may be more vulnerable up in Berkeley. But there was a lot of really passionate statement made. I thought a lot of the debate was really interesting, and it has a pertinence to Santa Cruz, which I think is real. So I'm going to play a little of that. And then I will get back to, why don't I just say it even before I get into it. I was asked for an update on the city council repression lawsuit, the false arrest that I suffered way back in 2002 for making a mock Nazi salute. Don't act like a bunch of fascists salute to the city council when they attempted to repress two speakers who were threatened with arrest. I actually repeated that when they did the same, Mayor Coonerty did the same thing with Occupy Santa Cruz speakers last fall. And I've done it occasionally. I don't usually do it. It happens only in extreme circumstances when I feel it has to be. It's not that, you know, it's not that big a deal. I mean, you're saying to the council, you're giving them a thumbs down. It's a boo. It's a don't do that. It's don't act like a fascist. And it's a perfectly legitimate First Amendment. Should be protected by the police, should be acknowledged by the council. Should be, if they don't like it, they should ignore it. I mean, I think they should pay some attention when people are expressing those kinds of sentiments and concerns. But it's certainly, you know, part of the natural dialogue of if we had a democratic process. But in fact, what they did was they arrested me, put me in jail, and then have spent $150,000 defending their right to repress. I was never charged with the crime of disrupting a city council meeting, which was the original arrest claim. The DA wouldn't charge me. And when I tried to sue them, they fought that and spent $150,000 of the taxpayers' money, taking the case all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, or trying to. Now they're going to be tried in October, the two mayors who made, the mayor and the council member. They were both actually mayors at one point or another, but they were also council members, and they, council member Fitzmaurice, Kissy Fitzmaurice, as I call him, and Christopher Crone, who was mayor at the time, did this, a false arrest, and they'll be going to trial on October 29th in San Jose in federal court. That's the update on that. I've offered to suspend any financial demands if the city will do what San Diego and Los Angeles has done and abandon the sleeping ban law, at least in some parts of the city where there'll be legal areas for people to sleep, and they won't have to face the kind of vigilante and police harassment that they are now facing outside every night, more so because of this mass hysteria that's being generated by some right-wing groups around the Colleen, the murder of the camouflage co-owner, Collins. And I've offered to say, you know, I'll drop my financial demands. That doesn't mean they won't have to pay something, because the attorneys who've been taking this case pro bono for me are not pro bono, but they've been taking it on a contingency basis based on if they think they're going to win, and I think they will too. City Council could have avoided this whole thing by simply changing its council rules to say, we won't be arresting people unless there's an actual disruption. You have a right to express your sentiments at City Council, provided it doesn't stop the meeting. And what I did and what others have done since, but have still been threatened with arrest for and sometimes removed from the chamber for, has been expressions of dissatisfaction with the council that haven't risen to a disruption. And that is really the issue. They feel somehow they can impose their own wants on and their own regulation of, it's kind of a gag order is a way of putting it, on the community when they come to what is really the community's city council, not the city council's city council. So that's the update on the what I call the Heil Krohn case, because Krohn was the name of the mayor, and it wasn't really a, it was, in other words, it was saying, you know, you're acting like a dictator. Don't do that. Don't act in an abusive police state fashion. And they still have that option. That is still on the table. If they want to do that, if they want to actually pay some attention to restoring civil rights for the homeless people and also restoring basic rights at city council to the community in a clear way, where they say we will not be arresting people for violations of the rules, but only if there's an actual disruption, which is what the Ninth Circuit Court has said is the law. So in a way, they shouldn't have to say it, but unfortunately, people, if it isn't really spelled out clearly in the council rules, will tend to be cowed by orders from the mayor, orders from the city council, threats to arrest. And that is something I think is unhealthy for a society that I would like to see turn into a democratic society. So that's the update on that. It's not much of an update. I understand Bob LaMonica went to the ACLU meeting on Wednesday at its new time and place. I guess it's got a new day, and it's still at 7 o'clock at the Loudoun Nelson Center every third or fourth Wednesday. He again lambasted them for their failure to address the ACLU's past omissions and commissions regarding such things as the New Year's DIY parade, where Wes Modes was arrested. Wasn't arrested, he was cited, but then he was dragged into court for walking in a parade without a permit. The same thing that hundreds, if not thousands, of others did. And it's sort of similar to what the DA is doing to Santa Cruz 11, going after 11 people when there were hundreds of people who did exactly what we did. Went into the building, observed what was going on, and left. That, and then were unmolested by the police until suddenly deputies appeared at the doors and arrest warrants came 2 months later in what seemed to be a very convenient attempt to get rid of certain activists who were seen, who were visible inside that building, because everybody, many went in and out, including council members and Sentinel reporters and so forth, which I've said many a time on the air and will no doubt say many a time again. While I'm going on in this kind of riff, I'll add that Ed Fry is, he was taken to court. Actually, I think we talked about this last. Well, he went to court on Tuesday, and he had hoped to be able to get more time to file a writ to the Supreme Court, because he's charged with essentially being in a peaceful protest where he was sleeping in front of the courthouse 2 years ago as what's called the Peace Camp 2010 protests. And he provided a porta potty facility and a protective area for homeless people to come when they had no place to go, and that was acknowledged by the Homeless Lack of Services Center informally, though we could not, for love or money, get Monica Martinez, the bogus director of that center. She's not the bogus director, she's the real director, but she's bogus in the sense of providing any real services, at least in this regard, to homeless people, letting the community know just how desperate things are and just how abusive police are for arresting or citing or harassing people who are sleeping outside in the, quote, illegal campsites, when in fact every campsite in Santa Cruz, without exception, that is on any public property, is illegal. Period. So that what that means is homeless people are illegal at night if they try to sleep and cover them up with blankets. And that, of course, is unconstitutional, to treat people as illegal. Particularly, you'll forgive me for pulling out the American citizen card, American citizens, however poor they may be, however unhoused they may be. And for those people who like to rant on about the evil immigrants who have come in, these are unfortunately often the same people who rant in about the legal citizens who are being treated unconstitutionally, who are being made illegal at night by, you know, the fact that Santa Cruz refuses to recognize it simply is a basic necessity. People have to sleep. And it's not that they want to sleep anywhere and everywhere, but they have to sleep somewhere. And that is something that is simply not facilitated. The shelters allow for less than 5% of the homeless population for shelter in Santa Cruz. And Ed Fry tried to address that issue, acting in the case of Robert Blind Bear Facer, a 63-year-old Amish minister who actually paddled all the way down from Alaska in a canoe. It took him a number of years to get down here. And he was cited for sleeping on the beach at a time when there was no shelter in the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And the Homeless Lack of Services Center didn't support him in court. They suddenly came up with beds that nobody knew about. He didn't know about. Nobody in the community realized were there. And they weren't really there. They were there on an emergency basis for... It was a way of getting the prosecutor to say, oh, see, there were these two beds. He could have been there if only he'd known. And therefore, it wasn't a necessity for him to sleep outside. Anyway, the case was stalled. Ed Fry decided he needed to engage in a protest and also against the existing laws. And he began Peace Camp 2010, which was remarkably successful. Huff supported him. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I'm with that meets every Wednesday. Come and join us, Sub Rosa Cafe, 7:03 Pacific, 10 o'clock, Wednesday mornings. And he was got all kinds of publicity, lasted for 3 months, but the county has exacted its vengeance. D.A. Bob Lee has gotten his pound of flesh, and on Tuesday, Ed Fry was found... He was sentenced. He'd been sentenced about a year ago. He had failed, and he went back to court, and he wanted more time to do another writ, and also an opportunity to represent Gary Johnson, a homeless man who, with him, was the principal target of D.A. Bob Lee in this whole situation, because Gary Johnson, or Ground Zero Gary, as I call him, is a fearless fighter around this issue. I mean, last winter he decided to lie down with a sign outside the county building on a bench that said sleep is not a crime, and they busted him for 4 nights running, and then they sentenced him to 2 years suspended for these crimes. Again, at a time when there was shelter for less than 10%, I guess it was the winter, the shelter was somewhat more than in the summer, for the homeless population. And this was happening at a time when Occupy Santa Cruz was also trying to assert the rights to restore public spaces to the public. And that was something, of course, that the authorities who run and manage these spaces want to keep very close control over, because they're okay with protests as long as they stop at a certain point and don't become truly effective. When they become effective and draw people in and start creating real change, then the authorities are themselves threatened, particularly if the protests are profound and go to the root of things, as I think Occupy Santa Cruz and the Occupy movement throughout the country did and hopefully will do in the months and years ahead. but you don't see too much of it visible now, or at least not in the media now. But it's still around. Occupy Santa Cruz meets every Sunday, 2 o'clock, in front of the post office, and every Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock in front of the county building. And it still has a website, and it's still working on foreclosure issues and issues of police misconduct and abuse of the homeless. So, anyway, Ed Fry on Tuesday was summarily told, you will go to jail on August 8th, and you have to report to jail. In fact, you have to check in today. And so, I'm going to try to get Ed on the phone, see if I can get some kind of response from him on that, see if he's...
All right, this is Ed. Leave a message, please. Thank you.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To send a fax, press 4 now. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Hey, Ed, this is Robert calling from Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're at 427-3772. If you'd like to call us before 8... and let us know, give us kind of the update on how things went on Tuesday. I mean, I've given my perspective, but you're the man who was at the center of all this. If you'd like to do that, please do, 427-3772. Also want to let people know that Ed is looking for funds, and not so much money, but also contacts with legal organizations in different cities to help file a friend of the court brief, because he's going to file his own brief to the Supreme Court for a writ of habeas corpus. In essence, his claim that he may have been tried by a judge for this so-called lodging crime, which is really a coded way of saying we don't want you to protest here, and we don't think the homeless have any civil rights that we are obliged to respect, and bring it to the attention of authorities in the California Supreme Court, maybe even in the federal courts. And he's looking for people who have connections with legal organizations, National Lawyers Guild, American Civil Liberties Union, I don't know, any legal foundations. If you know of people who are prestigious groups or even less prestigious groups, please get in touch with Ed. His phone number is 479-8911, 479-8911. Get a pencil again and help out Ed Fry, who's been doing his damnedest to help out homeless people for the last few years, for sure, and I think for the last few decades, if you look at his record. 479-8911 is the number to call. That's his number. You can leave a message. If you have any thoughts about different kinds of legal support groups that might be of interested in assisting with a friend of the court brief. So I'm going to do another musical break, and then we're going to hear a bit from Berkeley. And also I'm going to be playing some of the already archived interaction with District Attorney Bob Lee that happened a week ago Tuesday, which was very interesting. And we'll see, or we'll hear that. I've heard it. I couldn't play it in the last show because the audio was not sufficiently clear, but I think it's been improved thanks to the technical work of some Occupy Santa Cruz techie wizards, or actually one particular wizard. I don't know if he wants to be identified on the radio, so I'm gonna wait on that one, but he probably doesn't mind, but we'll see. Anyway, let's hear a little music. That was another one from Sarah Marlowe, Nothing at All. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. This is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, twice-weekly show here. And the phone number, in case you have a hankering to call in, is 427-3772. What do we got here? You know, I just got a letter from activist Bob LaMonica, and it's about his, in a way, a kind of quixotic struggle with the American Civil Liberties Union locally. American Civil Liberties Union is, you know, done many good things, but locally it hasn't, unfortunately. It did, you know, under Steve Plaich's leadership a couple months ago, it presented a sort of a somewhat weak but still welcome statement that the prosecutions of the Santa Cruz 11, and of course I'm one of them, so I would naturally be a cheerleader for that, but I also agree with it. If I weren't one of the 11, I would agree with it, stating that, you know, reporters should not be harassed, and there's some really serious problems since more than half of the activists being charged are reporters. And, of course, everyone's being harassed with this particular prosecution. I've talked about this at length. But the ACLU didn't say dismiss the charges. It just sort of said look into them more carefully or some such thing. So it was not as strong as it should be, not as strong as it could be, not as strong as it needs to be. But, you know, they do what they do, and I've known for years we've tried to get them to end the sleeping ban or at least to speak about it, do what other ACLUs and other cities have done, but they don't. Part of that is because politicians like Mike Rodkin, Ryan Coonerty, and others are on the board of directors or were at different times on the board of directors or have a very strong influence in the organization. And that's, you know, that's just life. That's where it's at with this organization. And my response has always been, go somewhere else. Start your own organization. You know, get a group that actually is concerned with civil rights and civil liberties like Occupy Santa Cruz was and still is in its own way. National Lawyers Guild is better, although National Lawyers Guild, local lawyers, some of them have stepped forward to try to help out in a sort of small ways with those charged with misdemeanors. Allison Cole was able to get the absurdly high bail for five Occupy Santa Cruz activists in December who were charged with interfering with officers because they were too slow to leave the campground that was being destroyed by the officers. She was able to get the bail reduced to zero because it was abusive, ridiculous. And those charges, which originally were $50,000 bail, have disappeared against the activists that they were charged with. Of course, 2 months later, they went after people for being in a building that the police didn't object to them being in at the time, at least in terms of any citations or arrests. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Well, Robert North.
That's me.
That's me, and that's not me.
No, no, that's you're
I
the other guy.
And thank you for at least talking about the ACLU local chapter.
Yeah, I was
disagree with you. They are pivotal.
Well, I don't think so.
They are the primary deflective presence to stand up against local abuse of power. They have been for at least 25 years, and I believe they need to be held accountable, I and others.
I know you do.
I think hats go off to Steve Plaich. But I'm not much of a blowhard, but I will say that my involvement with the ACLU got Steve involved.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably true,
all
Bob.
Right? And whether they like me or not, they're going to get an email from me every 3 to 6 months, and I'm going to show up.
Well, I think you could better use your time doing organizing
it's
a different group.
It's a fine use of time for me, because this is,
I know.
I state in my email that I...
Well, I wish you luck with that, Bob. You know that. And I was actually about to read your letter about Mike Rodkin, though. You know, Rodkin is not really... I mean, it's Matthews who's running for city council now. His sort of, you know, the shadowy Cynthia Matthews who wants to pillory Joel Miller for serving homeless food
Rodkin
to the homeless
is
once a week.
Primary defective, decades-long defective, deflective presence. I state that. Rodkin is the key. He's the person. This needs to be, at this point, in my opinion, personified.
I know you said
the
that.
The ACLU local chapter, if it were just a joke, it would be bad enough. But Robert, they look the other way. They hand out awards, and they have fundraisers, and they look the other way and go along to get along when some issues rise way into the black, way beyond just the gray.
Yeah, well, you're talking to the converted here, Bobby, and that's not, I mean,
well,
it's true.
I'm not sure about that, Robert, and you're one of the few radio voices that'll even allow this stuff to be presented.
Yeah, I like it to be presented, but having said it once, I don't think it needs to be said 16 times. I mean, you know, I think, you know,
I disagree. I think the ACLU Santa Cruz chapter is pivotal.
You said that, yeah, but if you keep saying it,
community's ability to deal with abuse of power.
Well, I understand. You believe that, and that's your belief. And I think in no way is it pivotal. I think it is a moribund, politically compromised organization that's under the thumb of local politicians, and therefore it's useless and meaningless. However, I don't think anybody goes to the ACLU to get anything done. I don't think the ACLU weighs in on shit.
Why are you touting the token minimal stand that the ACLU took on 75 River? Because it had meaning. Because they come with authority.
Yeah, I mean, people
have that stamp.
If they don't, they don't. But I don't think they haven't come and stood on the other side of these issues and supported. They just remain silent because they're compromised by these leaders. But that's a given. They do that.
It is not a given. If it were a given, Robert, the elections in Santa Cruz, the people that run for office would be very different.
No, it's a given. It's a given that they're not, Bob. It's a given that they're not progressive. That's it. And I, having said it once, I don't need to say it 67 times because there are plenty of other organizations that aren't progressive either. And you know, I'm more concerned with creating organizations, if I were good at that, that are progressive. And that is where I think I'd like to see energy go. And that's why I'm on the streets doing that.
I have a disagreement on a very fundamental point.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we really. It's not fundamental. Let's agree to disagree, and let me move on to the next issue here.
What constitutes political authority in a community?
What's that?
What constitutes political authority?
You know, I don't want to get into a theoretical discussion, Bob, because I have other stuff I want to put out. I have other stuff I want to put out on the show, and in fact, I'm actually going to read a little bit of your letter because I think the broader principles you talk about are very important. But spending your time, I was going to play, and I will be playing probably on Sunday, Mike Rotkin's attempt to arrest me at the ACLU meeting back in 2007, which I think is a hoot.
Well, it's Kafka.
Yeah, it's a hoot.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm more concerned. I think D.A. Bob Lee has a much bigger role than any ACLU member can ever think of. You know, so,
Robert, it's wrapped in.
Yeah.
If the ACLU were to stand up, now I raised the West Modes affair again, and this is what triggered me, at least recently. They took a blind eye to this guy being double standarded.
I know. I'm tired of hearing it, though, but I got to tell you, Bob.
They like the limelight.
I know,
Robert, they are the primary deflective president.
They're not. They're not primary, and they don't deflect anything. They just don't talk about it.
If I was wrong, then that little simple statement that they put out about 75 River would not have the power that it had.
Well, the only power, it had power.
The only reason they did that is because they would have no credibility at all had they not done something.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think part of it had to do with the fact that Rotkin is a teacher of Bradley's Stuart Allen, and you know he has some personal loyalty to him, and he also, I think, certain members of the ACLU, and this is not really, this issue is a broader issue than a local issue, although it is also local, and so because it's broader, I think they're more intimidated into acting, and I think we should intimidate all the local groups, and we should certainly press them, not intimidate them, hopefully inspire them, but it, you know, if, insofar as they're violating civil liberties, yes,
well,
people are violating civil liberties need to be intimidated.
I'm
going to
read one line from my, if you do read that part of the email.
Yeah.
This is about the ACLU. The purpose of this organization is recognition and response to abuse of power. The purpose of the local chapter is local application of values.
Mm-hmm.
I am too old and too tired of people that shout and rant when it's beyond the local application of values.
Well, you know, we don't disagree.
Label progressive.
But I don't want to hear it again. So I'm going to say this is good.
I think it is the single most important issue.
I know you do.
In our community and our time.
I know you do. And I don't think it is. I think it isn't the issue, but I don't think it's the issue of the ACLU. The ACLU doesn't give a shit, and it's not going to give a shit, unfortunately. But, you know, if that changes, if Steve Plaich is able to get more people to join and change everything around, that's great. Anyway, I thank you for your call, and I'm going to be reading a little of that, and, you know, keep us advised and informed, and don't get caught hugging Mike Rutkin. You know?
I can do this in the background. I feel very firm and strong about the necessity for it to be done.
I know you do.
It falls to someone like me, Robert, because I don't expect to gain any power or influence or friends among the so-called progressives.
Fair enough. And I notice I haven't made any recently, in spite of Bob Lee's and me doing our mutual embrace. So.
You're going to play some of that tape?
Yeah, I'm going to play that.
Yeah, that was...
I'm going to play it now. I'll talk to you in a bit.
See ya.
And first, before I do, Bob Lee is the district attorney, and I'll be going into that, which I actually have already gone into, and I'll be playing that tape in a moment. But what Bob wrote about, I'm going to have a few selected comments. He points out that in 25 years of going along to get along, looking the other way, minimal token intervention on the prosecutorial misconduct atrocity of the 75 River Street indictees, for sure. Had you done nothing, the local chapter risked losing any shred of remaining credibility. That's what Bob just said. I don't know. They've done nothing on a lot of issues, and they haven't lost any credibility. I don't know if they even have any credibility locally. I think most people just are unaware of these issues and continue to be unaware, although the more we raise the issues, the better. No amount of lipstick on the pig will remediate the situation. Defending the Bill of Rights in Santa Cruz County is what the ACLU supposedly stands for. It doesn't matter how polite, how contrite issues of abuse of power are presented to local law enforcement or the progressives. Yeah, I mean, what Bob is pointing out is the hypocrisy involved, and, you know, there's no disagreement there. I just wondered, you know, trying to convince Catholics to abandon the faith is hopeless, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I've tried. I've been there. But, I think it's more important that we go to the community and find people who share our faith in real civil liberties, and that's the people we need to turn to, not the people who don't and who call themselves civil libertarians. I mean, it's important to expose them, but it's also important not to get lost in the fight there with them, in my view. So let's look at this situation with Bob Lee. What I'm going to be playing comes from the Occupy Santa Cruz website. You can find it there, occupysantacruz.org. And it's under the title, Santa Cruz DA Befriends the Usual Suspects. And make sure you click on the big picture if you go there. There are two pictures. One has me arm in arm with Bob Lee, and the other has Bob Lee in a bigger picture talking to me, Ed Fry, Becky Johnson, and Gail Page next to San Lorenzo Park. And I'm going to play that segment now. Hopefully it'll play. And you're going to hear this discussion. I'll try to clarify if there's any confusion about it in a bit. And I'm waiting for it to go on. It seems to be taking its time, but hopefully that's going to happen soon. This is a conversation we had, again, a week ago Tuesday. And it happened because Bob Lee, the DA, happened to pull his car up right next to where we were tabling to get reports about harassment of the homeless. And I'm afraid we're having problems with this computer again. I apologize. Wait a minute. Maybe it's going to happen. It may be coming on now. I'm seeing a slow but... true response. There's a little... Bob is the district attorney, the elected district attorney of Santa Cruz County. And for the last 6 months, he has pursued 11 individuals, the Santa Cruz 11, as well as attorney Ed Fry and Bob Lee and Linda LeMaster for an earlier Peace Camp 2010 protest that I've talked about at great length on this show, mainly because these folks have been... These protests have been involved in trying to defend the rights of homeless people. And when the protesters themselves are arrested and hauled into court and seriously threatened with prison terms, it shows you the depth of what's really going on. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to keep working on this. Maybe I'll get somewhere. While I'm working on it, I'm going to be playing some more street interviews and crossing my fingers and apologizing again for not having a computer that operates in real time, which would be very nice.
Nancy, you concerned about some citations?
Yeah, I got a ticket on Pacific. A policeman caught me taking a couple of recyclables on Pacific Avenue out. And
stealing recyclables from one? You're stealing some valuable tin cans?
He only caught me with 10 cents, and I got a ticket. 10 cents worth of recyclables.
A $270 ticket for a 10 cent. Well, you know, honesty is the best. Well, I don't know about that. So where did this crime occur? What was the
recycling, because I was low on gas and I really needed gasoline for my car. So
you picked up a couple tin cans or aluminum cans?
Plastic. Yeah.
And who was the police officer? Do you remember?
I don't remember his name because the way he wrote it, like a doctor. You know, sometimes you can't read doctors.
He scrawled his name over there.
But I'm going to go take it to court, and I'm going to plead not guilty because I asked him, can you give me a break this time, you know? And he said no.
And do you remember how many cops were? Just one? In a car.
A car.
So he stopped the car.
Yes.
Did he block the road as he stopped the car?
I didn't really pay attention to
that. What time of day was it?
In the day. I went to Logan Nelson to the senior lunch, and then after that I went through town. And so it must have been about 12:45, something like that, in the early afternoon, close to 1.
Were you a perennial recycled criminal?
I rarely recycle. This is probably the third time I recycled in the last 2 years.
So they nabbed you on one of your rare criminal sprees.
Well, something I really need. I need to get gasoline from.
No, you live in your vehicle?
Yes, I do.
And have you?
No.
But I've been able to avoid that because of your.
I kind of move around different places, and I sometimes I stay in Boulder Creek at my son's.
Now, are you a single woman? Do you live alone, or do you have?
Yeah, I'm a single woman.
And how's that treated you? I mean, often one hears, you're not as beefy as us boys.
And as you can hear, this particular tape is got its problems. My apologies. These are the perils of audio recording. But what Nancy was saying is that she's been here since 1990. She's a single woman who lives in her vehicle. And I think it's really clear that... to me, it's really clear that a recycling ticket in this situation is a major burden for her. We haven't talked about any disability she has, but perhaps I'll talk to her about that next time I see her.
And in essence, if her account is accurate, she was ticketed for picking up a couple of plastic bottles from a Pacific Avenue recycling bin. A cop had to stop his car, get out, give her a $100 to $200 ticket to do that. Perhaps the police department is calling in to give us the real skivvy on this crime wave. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yes, this is Super Houseless.
In other words...
Freak Radio.
David Silva, do you have some additions to your last account?
I just want to say it was such an inspirational meeting, to hear, people finally, getting fed up with the system and all coming together and deciding to do something about it.
And you're talking about, of course, the veterans meeting.
Revolutionary Action Group, you'd be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I was really impressed with... some of the stories is like, just so unnecessary bureaucratic bullshit tragedies, that people run on people's lives. But when I stood up and said, I told people, reminded people, hey, don't let, houselessness be, the root for you being criminalized. If you got a ticket for sleeping, you can't go to the city, manager's office and get it written off if you were on any kind of waiting list for anything whatsoever anywhere. And so that was like about, I felt like about 70% of the people were like relieved all of a sudden. So that was really a surprise how many people are really, you know, hovering underneath this criminalization all the time. So that was quite enlightening for me.
Well, let me clarify, though, that the point that it's only two organizations that you can get the ticket written off for if you're
Thank
on a waiting
Robert.
List.
I was trying to get people to storm the office.
One of them is the River Street Shelter. The other is the Paul Lee Loft. If you're not on those waiting lists, it does not include it under the law. Now, you can go to court and, you know, with evidence or with a claim that there's been no space at the shelter, but Monica Martinez, the executive director of the shelter, has, you know, even though she says she'll give you a letter like this, I have yet to see any letters come out of the Homeless Lack of Services Center like they used to under previous management.
There is legal precedent, however, though, if you get yourself on any one of the lists, either the Pauli or the other one, my mind. You get on either one of those two lists, whether you're on the loft or the other. If you get knocked off of one, you're automatically on the other. You don't have to be like doing the bureaucracy yourself. They're supposed to have that automatically for you. So make sure that's set up for you. Once you ever get on the list at all.
Now, wait a minute. David. I've never heard that. I mean, you can. Wait a minute. You can get on the list of the River Street Shelter, and then if you get, you know, you've been in the shelter for a month and you get off, and you have to be out for a month, you can go over to the Pauli Loft and sign up. But you have to do that. You have to be constantly signing up for these lists. And those are the only two lists that you are that will immunize you from tickets.
Yeah.
Okay, River Street, the River Street Shelter, and the Pauli Loft. Go ahead.
The law is that you're supposed to already be on a list, and you just come over there and say whether you want to activate or not. And they have to be able to refer to it, and you can use that for getting your ticket cleared. And that is the established law. They may not be following.
If that's the established law, you better show it to me, because I've read the law, and that's not what it says as far as I can see.
Okay, well, let's challenge them then to that. That should be established law if it isn't.
But, yeah,
okay,
it should
Uncle Robert, I'm really in a lot of pain.
I'll let you go, man.
I do a veterans report mostly. I just want veterans to really get connected out there. You know, get plugged
so
into
you
your
have
veteran
a,
service office.
Do you have a number veterans can call that you might suggest they get in touch, either with you or someone else?
I mean, this time I don't. How do you like that?
Well, next time
I'm
you do.
I'm listening to your show, see, where my paperwork isn't.
Well, that's okay. If you get, but you know, let us know next time.
For sure. Next show, I'll let you know.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. All right, so believe it or not, I think we have Bob Lee talking to a group of us. At least that's what it looked like to me. It looked like the computer is finally coming around. Let's see if we actually are in that position. And we'll see if that works. Again, this is a Tuesday conversation a week ago that Bob had with us. And I will try to decipher it, but first I'll play it.
So they still get paid no matter what kind of case they get appointed.
That's actually true.
But not our sword. Our side. You guys say that all the time, that it's costing my office a lot of money. It's not costing my office
no,
any money at all.
Past
right. It's not costing. No, your literature says it actually costs the DA's office
unfair
money.
Situation for all the people who
so. Well, again, that's where you're wrong, too, because we actually went through that videotape for almost 73 hours trying to identify people. 73 hours of my office going through that videotape.
Now, what Bob is talking about with the videotape, and that's the DA, is the tape that is the main police evidence of people being in the building and presumably either lodging there or trespassing by being there, being told to leave and not leaving. Those are the two trespass statutes, apparently, that we're charged with. There's actually no video that I'm aware of that shows anybody vandalizing anything, but there was vandalism shown at the end of the occupation, and the argument being used is that all the people who were in the building, whoever they are, if they aided and abetted, they were equally guilty of vandalizing. They're all equally responsible for it. And Bob said he's viewed 73 hours of video, and he can only find the 11 people that he charged, which is interesting because the police kept a pretty close watch on that building, and some of us watching the video can recognize lots of people going in and out of the building, And it's interesting that he only can choose find 11 people. And indeed, police reports cite at least 14 or 15 people by name, including the 11 people that are charged with two felonies and two misdemeanors each for occupying peacefully a building that the occupiers then left peacefully, and that the police never told any of the individuals that were charged to leave at any time that I'm aware of. So one of the claims of one of the activists that was talking to Bob is, well, this is costing you a lot of money. He says, no, it's not costing us anything. I guess the implication is that they're pushing a lot of other cases down the road. It's just slowing everything up. And that certainly is a cost to the community. It may not be a financial cost, but in terms of real felonies being prosecuted, real crimes of violence, assault, robbery, murder, that are not being done because the courts are being filled with this political prosecution, that's a real consideration. And I think it does have a cost. Now, I think it's also fair to talk about the financial cost of this, because it does cost a certain amount to have a district attorney in court, a district attorney investigators looking at 73 hours at video. And it's not clear here whether he really is. It seems he's saying they looked for 73 hours over the video, but he may mean they had 73 hours of video. We haven't gotten 73 hours as defendants to look over to see where the supposed evidence is that we were engaging in criminal behavior. And the only thing that you can actually look at some of the video online. You can go to the police chief's blog, and you can go to the district attorney's blog. Those of you who are out there listening are interested in this. You can see people going in and out of the building. And they actually put out a snitch call. It's like they put out a recent snitch call for illegal campsites. Can you identify these people so we can haul them into court? Anyway, that's some of what Bob Lee's talking about with that 73 hours. And here's some more of this. I thought it would be louder, and I've got this turned up all the way, but it is louder when you actually go, if you have your own computer and you tune in on the OccupySantaCruz.org website. But this is not as loud as it could be, so my apologies. Doing a lot of apologizing today. I'd like to apologize for that. And I'm trying to get this thing to start again so we can hear some more, but there we go. Here we go.
73 hours.
How come we only have less than 10 hours?
Because nobody can identify anybody. We actually took it to Santa Cruz PD. We actually rejected it and took it back to Santa Cruz PD and said we identify these people.
Right.
But the question is, why are you doing this? You're charging, more than anybody, any other DA in the country.
$30,000 of damage. Come up with the money and we'll have a different situation.
Now, what about Catherine Byers? You can identify her.
Again,
why not Byers?
It's actually $26,900 now. But
that's what they're telling their insurance company.
Well, again, you guys pay the restitution, we'll have a different ballgame.
There's an interesting statement by D.A. Bob Lee. It's about money. He wants us to pay Wells Fargo money for things we didn't do. We went into the bank, we observed what was going on, we left, and some people, apparently a small faction, I would suspect, of the group that was occupying it, in violation of the wishes of the majority of the people occupying it, did some graffiti. And I think some pieces of furniture were broken at some point. There may have been one window broken. And the Wells Fargo claimed this was $26,000 in damages. We're still looking to look for those bills. Wells Fargo, as many may or may not be aware, is the largest foreclosure operator in the country, seizing all kinds of homes based on the kinds of fraudulent dual-track foreclosure loan modification shenanigans it's been engaging in and continues to engage in and has been found guilty of engaging in. And also, it's the largest recipient of, well, it's one of the largest recipients of federal money, the billions of dollars that the taxpayers paid to bail out the banks for the kinds of investments that they made in the last 10 years with the bundling of the securities that was such a huge scandal, and that both, unfortunately, Obama and Bush regimes and their buddies in Congress have supported. And one of the points I would have liked to have made if we had had enough focus on this is the fact that the real guilty people here are Wells Fargo. You know, the attempt to turn Wells Fargo into a poor group whose home was invaded. This is a vacant building that's been across the street from their bank for 3.5 years. It's been an eyesore downtown, along with three other vacant banks. These are huge vacant buildings that could be put to good use as community centers or something else, that are just sitting there and that essentially taxpayers get to pay for. And Wells Fargo, you know, leases for $28,000 a month. I don't know, maybe it gets a tax write-off. I'm not sure why or why it does this. And here's, you know, Bob Lee, who's the bag man for Wells Fargo. He wants, he expects a bunch of poor people to pay $30,000 in damages for stuff they didn't do in a protest that was actually both a public benefit in exposing Wells Fargo and also in trying to open up an actual community center. A protest that ended peacefully, a protest that he's now saying, in essence, it would be a different ballgame if you just kick us down 30 G's. At one point, I was going to suggest that many people in the community walk up to the DA and say, I was in the building, too. If you're going to go after these 11, go after all of us. But I'm tending to rethink that position because it looks like DA Bob Lee is looking for money. And what he wants to do is to get as may want to do is get as broad a slice of the community as possible that he can squeeze on behalf of Wells Fargo for things that they didn't do, but that somebody that a small faction did at some point. It's really execrable what he's doing, and it's very much, it looks very political. It looks like he wants to he's kind of burnishing the wounded pride of the police department. He's there are some conservative factions of the community that don't like the Occupy movement generally and want to attack it. So $30,000 and you can go home, that sort of thing isn't quite what he's saying, but it sounds like that's the message. Let's see if I can actually get this going to play the rest of his. It's a very iffy situation, unfortunately, here in the studio. My apologies. While that's happening, let me see if I can we can listen to some other interviews.
And we resisted, we stood in between, and we said, Ed Fry will not go to jail today.
You heard the dramatic account from Steve Blake. Ed, what happened here today?
Oh, the judge went along with what the DA wanted, of course, which is to go to jail. So he set an August 8th date for me. I got a report.
And what kind of argument was made in your defense?
None. I didn't want to argue with him. He'd have thrown me behind bars today, and then I'd missed my daughter's wedding.
You're so properly dressed, Ed. I don't see how that could happen.
It's okay. Send anybody to jail.
And I made that comment because in Gallagher's court, because Ed appeared in sweats at one time in solidarity with the defendant, Ed Gary Johnson, a homeless man, he was held in contempt of court.
Yes.
The DA told, she said, the defendant needs to turn himself into jail. That was the position of Bob Lee and his little DA force. And you missed the other quote from Judge Moody, who said, you're just wasting our money. Your case has been on calendar a zillion times.
Yeah. He said that?
Judge Moody, who is sitting in for Gallagher today.
And this is the case, again, of the Peace Camp 2010 protesters, specifically of Ed Fry, the attorney activist who every night supplied a porta potty for homeless people to use, a safe spot for them to sleep. Food was arranged. It was, again, a peaceful protest outside the county building demanding a change in the sleeping ban laws of Santa Cruz. Not a permissible thing because now Ed is facing 4 to 6 months in jail. In fact, he's been told he has to report to jail in early August.
Oh, Judge Moody. So we have a new judge. Well, that's excellent. He was apparently rather moody, in other words.
His mood was not to.
100 years. All right. Hey, Nazarene.
He barely kind of tottered up the steps to the bench, and then he sat down and kind of looked at Ed. He was glowering at it.
Ah, glowering, indeed. So perhaps an objective opinion. Were you in court today? Did you see this event happen,
No.
Greg?
No. I actually left before. I'm not interested to. So I thought he was appearing on one of you guys' cases. I didn't know you guys were appearing on his.
Ed Fry. I am recording for Free Radio. You have any comments on this?
No. Robert, it's good to see you.
Ah, you are. And a mellow comment from Attorney Greg Coben, actually, who's here. Who's looking healthier than in the last 5 years. You're looking better there, Greg.
Yeah,
it's true.
Stop it.
C-Plate, you also had an event in court. What happened there?
They just took me off calendar because while the default judgment was entered, it wasn't a judgment.
And so what was your case, for those who don't know?
The people of California versus T-Place from the Occupy cases, they accused me of creating or participating in a public nuisance. And so it's been their strategy all along.
The campground at San Lorenzo Park.
San Lorenzo Park occupation. So
it was destroyed by the police on December 8th.
Handled, indeed it was. So I was intending to go in and kind of keep that case going today, but the district attorney apparently stepped in and dismissed the entire matter on behalf of the people, and so now I can either take a writ and try to get it back on calendar on several legal points, or I can just let it go, and I'm just kind of determining my strategy.
You're weighing your options. Bob Lee is passing by, and he's chatting with people in the hallway. And attorneys are discussing the case of Ed Fry, who's going back to the Juzgado on August 8th. Actually, one of these attorneys is Jonathan Gettleman, who has a client, Linda LeMaster, whose trial on the same charge is coming up. Jonathan, hi. Has appealed this using the unusual writ of habeas corpus. Linda, you're here in the let me put that differently. You're in the corridors of the courthouse. We're both in the corridors of the courthouse. Bob, you want to chat with us? He's stolid. He says nothing. That man is imperturbable.
Well, I think he's probably.
He noticed my tape recorder. That was Bob Lee passing by. But Linda, you're actually more important than Bob Lee because you're actually doing something for justice. Lee, on the other hand, seems to be working in the other direction. But what do you think of the situation with Ed Fry? You've just heard he's off to jail. You are facing a similar charge. What's your reaction to that?
I think we're wasting the resources of the state to go along with this stuff.
Sounds like a considered and moderate statement.
Linda for president.
And what's your name, Adam?
I'm an innocent coral reef bystander.
We have someone who doesn't want to identify herself, but she actually does have a radio show for those of you who recognize voices on the radio. I'm not going to blow her cover, however.
She has a Santa Cruz 11 button.
And both of you have a Santa Cruz 11 buttons. I myself am buttonless today, apparently. And here comes it's Janecki. What do we call him? Shucks Janecki. That's what Robert Flora used to call him. Golly G. Janecki. That's it. Yes. Hey, how's it going, man? Now they're sending Ed to jail. Did you hear about that? Ed Fry's going to jail on August 8th. Yeah, the judge refused to stay the sentence, and so he's off to jail. Ed Fry was sentenced to jail today. So.
Yeah, I heard that. I'm hoping it was a little bit later because I had a couple other things. Where is he?
Ed took off.
No,
that's not him. But he did take off. He's got to get ready for his appearance at the
August 8th.
I think is it August 8th?
Yeah. Did they have much discussion of any other options or any?
He didn't want to argue with him. He did not want to argue with him then, or else he might have to go right away. And
he did.
Not
Gallagher. No. I guess apparently
the visiting judge. He did request to be there for his client's trial, which is August 24th, and the judge said, "You are wasting our money here, and you've been on the calendar a zillion times," quote, unquote.
Okay, well, I'll call Ed later. Thank you.
All right. And that was the substitute Sentinel reporter who I recognize, but his name I do not remember. Do you know her name?
It's slipping my mind.
Slipping my mind does not sound like the right name, but probably the right thing, actually. Well, thank you for the update. And attorney
attorneys are emerging from Judge Gallagher's court. Could anybody be worse than Judge Gallagher? Well, apparently Judge Moody can. So Gallagher has actually been able to elevate himself in comparison with Mangalam Moody, as I may call him in the future, or perhaps not. That depends on my mood.
The judge called it like he said he needed to call it, because he had to get along with the DA, who ignored it, even though he said, Ed, we won't pick on you.
Who said that?
Judge DA.
Who was the DA? Bob Lee was actually there in person?
Well, the other day when we asked him, when Ed was standing there and with him, and that momentous picture of the four of you, two of them were the Santa Cruz 11, one was Ed Fry, one was Bob Lee.
And let's try to get back to that, because I think we actually may be able to hear some of that now. This, again, is the the Tuesday before that Friday. You've been listening to Friday conversations in the corridors here of the courthouse right outside Department 2, where Ed was told to come back and go to jail on August 4th for 4 months to finish the rest of a six-month sentence. Bob Lee, some days before, had this conversation. At least, here we go.
But we're not responsible for the restitution. The people who did the vandalism.
I'm not going to argue with you.
But I just want to ask, what about buyers?
Again.
You could identify buyers, right?
I'll leave it in this story. When I was in high school here, one of my friends invited us into his neighbor's house. Some of us were smart enough not to go.
I'm going to get this up. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. No tape.
No tape?
Yeah.
No pictures? No tape?
No. Some of us were smart enough to go. Then she acted surprised when these high school kids damaged the house. She shouldn't be surprised.
What about Catherine Byers? In other words, you could identify her, but you're not charging her. Why?
Well, she was trying to get you out.
She was recommended for prosecution.
Well, me, I was
anyway,
in there.
Watch my car, okay?
And he's
Bob,
he's admitting
I was in
to
there. Tell your deputy, I was in there.
Okay. Ed, I'm not going to pick on you.
Are you offering something to us as a group now, perhaps?
And the significant things that are hard to hear but that are part of that last conversational bit from D.A. Bob Lee to a group of people including me, Ed Fry, Becky Johnson, Gail Page, is he says he acknowledges that Catherine Byers was in the building, but, she was trying to get you out is the reason he isn't prosecuting. It sounds like he's either making it up or he's believing information that is in conflict with other stories I've heard. And for Byers' own interview with me, she's actually talked to me twice about this, not recently, but in the fairly some months ago when I interviewed her for Free Radio.
It's been a long, tedious process.
It's a game for you, but it's the lives of the people that are being ruined.
My victims are nothing like defense. It's not a game at all. You wouldn't know me very well to say this. I've been doing this for 30 years. You would not know me at all. So
it's not fair to the people who are being prosecuted.
Yeah.
And the last interchange between Gail Page and Bob Lee was Gail was calling out Bob and saying, this obviously is unjust. And Bob was saying, you know, he's saying it's a game to you. And Bob was saying, no, in my 30 years, it's not. Bob apparently got rather upset when he heard this claim that it was a game to him. And it sounds like Gail hit his soft spot, that in fact it actually is a big game in a way. That's what all these prosecution defense exchanges are. It's a very elaborate, it's supposed to be a very, you know, a game that reveals the truth or that somehow ends up with a closer approximation of justice. But in this situation, it is, there's little hope of recovering money from the people who are being charged. There's no indication that they vandalized anything. There's serious doubt that they can be formally charged with trespass and that this isn't a form of selective prosecution. It's happening months later. It's being done on behalf of a huge corporate bank who probably owes the city and the citizens of the city many times what they lost in what seems to be a very over priced assessment of the damages done. And it really looks like a political prosecution of activists that the police department and the DA don't like, but that are opportunistically available to be harassed. And that's interesting. Another question, of course, is prosecutorial misconduct. Much as I appreciate the fact that Bob Lee is talking to us directly, the fact that he's saying things like, you know, I'm putting it colloquially, but kick down 30 G's and, quote, it's a different ball game, is a way of saying it's not really justice. It has to do with, you know, money. And he's, you know, he, as I said, he's the bag man for Wells Fargo here, having little to do with any kind of justice. Lee is big to talk and is very passionate when he talks about justice, I'm told. One of our activists has been closely following his attempt to get additional money at the Board of Supervisors when he stated, you know, how diligently he pursued some very small bad check and cost the department tens of thousands of dollars to get to, but it was for justice. And that seems to be his line with the public, and maybe that's his really his belief. Because he seemed to get very upset when it was brought to his attention that he seems to be playing a game here. The game being, I can keep recharging you with these charges, as he's doing to at least two defendants who have already been released by the judge. So there's not enough evidence. But the next week they're charged again with exactly the same charges. And they've got to go through the whole process again. That's Cameron Lorando and Angel Alcantara, who are also being, you know, having to go. We're all going to go to a preliminary hearing on August 20th in Judge Burdick's court. Again, it's going to be, as I've often said, the circus of a lifetime there. You can review this tape and actually hear it yourself in better quality at OccupySantaCruz.org. Make sure you click on the big picture, not the little one under the story. Santa Cruz DA befriends the usual suspects. And also, as usual, I'm running out of time, and also running out of patience with this computer, which is extremely slow. On Sunday, I hope to come back with the Berkeley City Council stuff that may be so outdated I may not want to play it, although it really isn't. The passionate arguments against laws that criminalize people for sitting on the sidewalk are relevant to Santa Cruz very much today. And I think worthy of getting into. I may be playing Mike Rotkin's attempt to have me arrested at the ACLU when he was organizing an event out at the Marine Center. I will probably be playing some earlier clips from earlier sleep-ins and protests in 1996 and 2010. And all kinds of other stuff as well. Of course, this computer is so slow, I may have to hit it several times in anger. But maybe I'll have my computer with me and I'll be in better shape at that particular time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming up is a special guest edition of From the Cream to the Dregs with that notorious quacker, R. Duck, and apparently is an associate, and Mr. Beautiful
Made of Waffles.
That sounds edible. You're getting me hungry here. I better whip out and get some dinner or maybe some breakfast. So that's coming up from 8 to 11. Uncle Dennis's show is being taken over while Dennis heads for the hills. I'm not sure what he's up to, but maybe R. Duck can kind of take over and let you know. I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30 trying to swim my way through a difficult current of contrary computerism. And in the meantime, if you've seen stuff that you think needs to be brought to my attention, call the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And that pretty much is that. Thank you.
Teacher, teacher. But when you try to reach out, they only want you to disappear. Access denied. I take a step forward. Access denied. They just push me back. It's an endless downward spiral. I feel so helpless when I'm under attack.
Won't you take me back, baby? Try to drive me one more time.